Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
FormulaOneBlog.com. Downshift.
Where is Michael Schumacher?
He's going to do a good battle. I tried to stay with him, but he was really flying, and I couldn't stay with him.
But he does like to beat up on a Ferrari when he gets half a chance.
Well,
once again, someone's hit me in exactly the same corner.
Yes or no, can we start it?
Yeah, there was a big problem. I just saw Nick, a poor guy, I'm sorry for him.
I am so annoyed. I can't tell you how annoyed I am.
Before I get started, I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the terrorist action in London today. And everyone that listens to our podcast knows I'm a huge Anglophile, and they probably know that most of my friends, other than Tim and Alex and Greg, are British. So I was hoping that you would join me in just a moment of silence for those that lost their lives in the terrorist activity. It's a wonderful nation, wonderful people. It is the spiritual home of Formula One. And I thought the least we could do as Americans is just take a moment and pause. Would you do that with me? Thank you very much for doing that. Appreciate it. Okay, 2017. Well, first, FormulaOneBlog.com. So how are we doing? We're doing pretty well. One of the bigger websites on Formula One in America is right here in St. Louis. Not New York, not LA, not Austin. It's in St. Louis, and I'm very, very proud of that. We're running about 65,000 downloads a month of our podcast. If you don't listen to the podcast, maybe you should, because 65,000 other people are. So you also come to peer pressure, right? So 65,000, we just passed our 5 millionth download since we started podcasting. The site's been around since 2005. Podcasts have been around since 2007. So we just started that, 5 millionth. We just celebrated over our 500th episode. And I'm not sure what that equates to, what size a chunk of my life that's taken, but it's a bunch. And you can just ask my wife, she'll tell you. But it is wonderful events and friendships that I've met and made over the time that it's been wonderful. Has anyone had a chance to listen to the podcast that we put up on Monday or Sunday night with Steve Matchett from NBC? It's a season preview podcast. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, you should. Steve is a dear, dear friend of mine, and I think you would really, really enjoy that podcast in particular. So, yeah, we're doing all right. Doing well, over 2 million page views, 40,000 social media, we're hanging in there, not too bad. So let's talk about the 2016 campaign. Before we do a little preview, let's just review a little bit about what was going on in 2016 and perhaps what we learned. First of all, Nico Rosberg is the world champion. He's got 9 wins, that's one less than his teammate, Lewis Hamilton. He's got 385 points. That's 5 points more than his teammate, Lewis Hamilton. And 16 podiums. That 5 points means he wins the title. So Mercedes last year, I don't think I'm putting this too... I'm not blowing this out of proportion. Mercedes looked absolutely unreal last year. They were just punishingly dominant last year, and they were fabulous at what they did. So that hadn't changed. So they won again last year. Ferrari never really materialized in testing. We thought maybe they would. We were hoping they would. We came off that season where we had 2 drivers battling. And there's nothing wrong with a team letting 2 teammates battle it out. It's great, and I'm glad that Mercedes did that, because if they didn't do that, we'd have nothing to watch, right? If they just called Barrichello-type team orders, we would all be, you know, in trouble. So the fact is they did let him run, which I appreciate. But on the flip side, we're all wanting that inter-team battle more so than that intra-team battle, right? That's what we were looking for. And we just didn't get it last year. It also showed last year that Lewis can be beaten. And that's depending on who you ask, of course, because Lewis Hamilton fans would argue that perhaps there was some argy-bargy and some conspiracy going on, and he had more mechanical failures than anyone else, and that just goes to show the team was, you know, wanting Nico Rosberg to win and all the other caveats that go along with it. And the fact of the matter is, you could look over the last 2 or 3 years that these two gentlemen drove together, and Nico was there or thereabouts. And the fact is that if Lewis is the benchmark, which he is, he's an incredibly talented driver, that means that Nico Rosberg is incredibly talented too. And he's a very deserving world champion, in my opinion, because I don't think you don't run with Lewis Hamilton in the same machinery and take poles from him and win some races over him. You just don't do that if you're, you know, a ho-hum driver. So I think Nico is a worthy champion for sure. Unfortunately, Nico, done. I'm out of here. He retired, shocked the entire F1 community. Everyone thought, you know, he's going to come back, and oh my gosh, he's going to defend the title, and Lewis is going to be really mad now, right? He may tweet something. Look out. But Nico promptly retired. This sent Mercedes into a scramble to replace him. They did replace him. We'll talk about that in a few slides. And also, if you're going to get into F1, so my advice to Greg White as he moves back to the East Coast and starts to count his retirement money is that when he wants to buy a Formula One team, what he's going to want to do is to do a listed parts program. Because he could go to Dallara, buy a chassis, and then go to Ferrari and buy engines and transmissions and look at that listed parts program and buy everything on that list that the FIA approves and basically build a car, right? But it's a genius way to do it. And kudos to Gene Haas and Haas F1 for doing this program, because not only did they show up on the grid and not look like Manor or HRT or Caterham, they showed up on the grid and were in the points. And that one point, folks, if you get into 10th place in the Formula One Championship, it's worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million in prize money. So kudos to Gene Haas. I think it was a great move to do that listed parts program for sure. Also, the plucky teen Max Verstappen is the real deal. That's what we figured out. He started out in Toro Rosso. They jettisoned Daniel Kvyat. They moved Max Verstappen in. The guy wins a race. 19 years old. I didn't know my butt from third base when I was 19 years old. And this kid comes out and wins a race. He's the real deal. He's aggressive. He sticks his nose and he goes for it. That's what I love about Lewis, what I love about Alonso, what I love about Vettel. He goes for it. And this is a mark of a champion. He's not there to play wet nurse to anyone, including Daniel Ricciardo, who himself is no slouch. Trying to get around Daniel Ricciardo is not an easy task. So I think Max is for real. He's the real thing. Also, power units. Good news here, folks. They're still bankrupting teams. So for any of you that are wondering how those V6 turbo hybrids are working out, well, they're still bankrupting teams, and we'll get into that in a minute. So what about F1 being sold? Well, before the new year, a portion of F1 was sold, like 13, 18, somewhere in that neighborhood, percent of Formula One, by Liberty Media. So Liberty Media, an American company, you know, the Brits got to be wondering, what's going on? Haas F1, they got an American team now, and now an American company buys it. Wait a minute, this is our sport, right? But they bought it for $8 billion. That's what Samsung bought Harman for, right? So it's a lot of dough. The F1 generates $1.8 billion a year with a net return of $463 million. All right, so that's what CVC was skimming off the profits. So that's what they bought. And I put this chart up here just so you see, this is the prize money distribution. In 2016, Ferrari made, out of Formula One, their involvement in Formula One, $192 million. Mercedes made $171 million for their efforts. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot of folks that say Mercedes spend around $400 million on their program. So, you know, a little bit of a delta there, right? I don't know where they're picking that up. Also, Red Bull, $144 million. Now, there is something called an LST, which is a long-standing team. It's a historic team payment that really frustrates everyone, including fans, except for Ferrari fans, and I know where you are. They just get a chunk of money for being around for so long. That's what they get. Now, that sounds unfair, but keep in mind, folks, here's what happened. You remember when all the teams joined FOTA, the Formula One Teams Association? They were threatening they could just leave and start their own series. Remember when all that was going down? Well, Mr. E went to Red Bull first, paid them a lot of money, and got them to break from FOTA and do a bipartite agreement with them directly. Ferrari was the second one to do that. And Sergio Marchionne may not be a big fan of Luca di Montezemolo, but he signed a hell of a deal there, didn't he? He got $70 million just for being around since 1950. So Ferrari, a huge mark. But it's a lot of money. Total payout, $965 million. So that's what they made. So when people say, oh, well, Bernie and CVC, they just scam all the profits. No, the teams get all the profits. They get the lion's share of the profits. And that was negotiated in these bipartite agreements. So that's how that works. No, they will this year, though. Okay, so with buying Formula One, Liberty Media, they got some big ideas, some really big ideas. The first one is the growth in the U.S. market. They're an American company. They're a media company. They own a portion of the Atlanta Braves. They also own a portion of Live Nation. Live Nation, a very big booking ticketing agency and organizer for live concerts and events like that. That bodes well, right? They're big on social media. They really want to try to drive different revenue streams, alternative ways for us to consume their product. They have a lot of big ideas. All of that's good, but we haven't heard those yet. So we got to be patient and wait for them to figure out what they bought, where the plants go, and where the coffee maker is before they figure out what they're going to do to promote the sport. But they did buy that. They also are very dedicated to the European tracks. So their concern was, look, you know, the home of Formula One has always been in Europe. They love that notion. They want to anchor this series. More races in America, more focus on Europe, and that all goes well. Now, the problem with that is that Baku paid $400 million for the race, and Magny-Cours in France won't pay a buck, right? So there's a problem there. So you can say that you want to go race in Europe, but nobody in Europe is paying what people in emerging markets in Asia-Pac are going to pay. And you can be upset that Bernie moved the races to these far-flung locations around the world, but the reason he did that is because they're paying. It was after 2008 and the financial crunch. Does anyone know a business that didn't take a 30% hit across the board in 2008, 2009? I don't. Formula One didn't. So they just moved the game. They moved the goalposts. They went out and found Asia-Pac and emerging markets that would pay big dollars for this race. They didn't suffer that. So one of the big things, oh, big quiz here. You have to look at this picture. I'm only going to give you one guess on this. Can anyone tell me which gentleman is Niki Lauda? Right? Big guess there, right? Right. Bernie Eccleston is out. Greg, no more breakfast with Bernie. It's unfortunate. No more Bernie Eccleston. He is officially completely, totally out. He was bought out. There are a lot of fans that are dancing and singing Hallelujah, Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. I'm not one of them. I've always had a tremendous amount of time for Bernie Eccleston. I've never not known Formula One in my entire lifetime without Bernie. And that's all good and bad. I'm not saying that all of his ideas were gold-plated. I certainly wouldn't say that all of his words are gold-plated. Or his, you know, the way he does deals and money and all that. Maybe that's a little suspect. Fact of the matter is, he's made a lot of millionaires in that paddock. All of those team bosses, Williams, McLaren, all of those guys are where they are because he made them what they are. And he took all of the risk when none of the teams would and none of the race promoters would. There's a book, it's a biography about Bernie, and it's a really good book. You should read it because it may change your mind of what you think about him. He's no angel, and he admits that. But the fact is, I've never not known Formula One without him. He was offered a chairman emeritus position, and he said, I don't know, I guess that's something those Americans do over there. I don't know what that means. And he said it doesn't. He can't do anything in Formula One, basically, and his old employees have been told not to even talk to him. So that's kind of what we got going on there. So what's happening in this picture? No, it's not your Eyes Wide Shut movie or whatever that Tom Cruise movie was. What's happening here is Flavio Briatore felt so bad, because he's a good friend of Bernie's. He felt so bad that Liberty Media treated him this way that he threw a party in London and invited all of the who's, all the luminaries of Formula One. And guess what? Every single one of them showed up. I'm talking about the top people in Formula One. Every single one of them showed up to pay respect to what he did and what he did for them and what he did to the sport. And so Flavio had them all wear Bernie masks. So I thought that was kind of funny. And even Nikki was there, if you can figure that out. So anyway, that happened. Also, he cashed out. Two things on the cash out. The FIA, a few years ago, spent over around $400,000 and bought a percentage of shares of Formula One. When they sold to Liberty, they turned that into $70 million. That's a payday, isn't it? Would that be considered windfall profit? I don't know. That's a big way to go, Jean Todt. The little Frenchman is a wicked investor. So that's amazing. So he turned that from 460 into 70 million. Ecclestone's family nets 800 million, or that's the rumor anyway, out of the deal. The fact is that 800 million is to the family. It's really to him personally, and then Sleck, which is a family trust, which still has his ex-wife and his two daughters on that family trust. So the family Ecclestone gets that money, not him totally. Also, Ferrari owned a portion of Formula One. They sold out, they cashed out, but they turned around and took an offer from Liberty Media where teams could buy in and buy shares of Liberty Media. Now, this was the offer. At first, none of the teams took the offer. They extended the window that they could do this, and Ferrari was the first team to buy in. Now, on surface, you think, oh, well, okay, whatever. But bear in mind what they bought. They bought shares in Liberty Media, which are non-voting shares. They have no control of the direction of this. And if the F1 strategy group goes away, I don't know how this will play out. So Sergio felt good about it because he did it. I don't know if Luca would have done a deal like this, but I think in hindsight, I thought, no, something else has got to be going on. And it possibly is one of those cases where you get the most seminal name in Formula One on board to put a little pressure on the other teams to sign up for the deal and get on board and play ball. So we'll have to see what happens on that. Also, the European Union, you know, when you turn an investment of $460,000 into $70 million, and you also happen to be the organization that can approve or not approve the sale of Formula One, and you go ahead and approve it, and you make $70 million, yeah, the EU wonders if that isn't an issue. And so the EU is taking a very long look at this deal. Now, they haven't said they're going to engage in an investigation, but they're very, very interested in that, and they're also interested in that prize distribution system for the small teams that lodged a complaint with the EU. So we'll see what happens there, too. All right, let's talk about 2017. 2017, first up, winter testing. There was 8 days of winter testing, and I have really good news for Mercedes fans. They look really good again. They look really good. No surprise there, probably. But they may have a challenger. We said this last year. But there's a couple things that may be a little different than last year, and we'll look at those. Also, the cars changed. There was big regulation changes for 2017, and we'll get into some of those in a minute. But the bottom line is the regulation changes came because they wanted to make the cars faster. And somebody threw out this term, you know, I don't know, this car should be 5 seconds faster. I don't know how they come up with that number. But guess what? In testing, they were. I know the stunned faces, like, wow, F1 actually achieved something they said they were going to do. They did, you know. So the lap times in testing were 5 seconds faster, and that's the first thing that we noticed. Now, your two leaders out of testing, no surprise here, Mercedes at the top. Now, the thing to look at here is let's get the lap times out of the way. The fastest lap time set in all 8 days was set by Kimi Raikkonen, and he did a 118.7. 6.34, that was the fastest lap time. That was done in a Ferrari, not a Mercedes. Okay? Both Mercedes set 1.19.3s and change, with Valtteri Bottas leading that charge over teammate Lewis Hamilton. So Valtteri was slightly quicker than Lewis, not much. And then Sebastian Vettel was a 1.19, still 0.3-ish up on the Mercedes. But the key to testing isn't necessarily the lap times. It's the mileage. It's crucial, the mileage. And look at Mercedes' mileage. Between the two of them, 3,100 miles in 8 days, with Valtteri Bottas doing more than any other driver, just over 1,800 miles. Sebastian Vettel, right on his tail, just over 1,700 miles. That's a bunch of miles on those two cars. So those were your testing leaders. Those were the two teams that looked the strongest, and they looked to be putting in a lot of mileage, which is huge for reliability, huge. All right, so I hate to be a buzzkill. You know how I am. I'm always ruining things and screwing everything up and being a buzzkill. But the fact is, Mercedes still look really, really good, even though their times are slightly slower. No one knows what program, what tires, what... There's a lot of variables to that speed, right? So no one really knows. Lewis could show up this weekend and beat the stuffing out of the entire field, and it would not surprise me. I'm just putting it that way. Ferrari, though, I do believe have turned a corner. They really struggled last year quite a bit, and Sebastian was incredibly frustrated last year. The car just was not hooked up. It was better for Kimi last year, but not Seb. So the program did not come together the way that Ferrari wanted it to. You can tell they've done their homework over the winter. They put in a tremendous amount of mileage, so that's important. So that's good. Renault, they had some issues. But what happens is when you look at the chart on the right-hand side, Mercedes, keep in mind, it's just not the works team. Mercedes has three teams running Mercedes engines, right? That's six cars. In total, over six cars with Mercedes power units, they ran 7,700 miles. That's a bunch of mileage, right, to prove out any niggles or issues with that engine, right? Ferrari have three teams, six total cars running Ferrari engines. Similar, 7,100 miles. That, again, is a lot of miles. Renault, they've got three teams, six cars, but they were only able to run 5,300 miles. You start to see the disparity there. And the biggest, perhaps, disparity of testing happens to be at the bottom of the list with McLaren, with one team that ran 1,200 miles. That's a 5,000-mile delta in testing. Any McLaren fans here? Oh, boy, you guys jettisoned quick, didn't you? McLaren? Who's McLaren? What's that? A few years ago, every one of you raised your hands, you know. Alonso, oh, wait. So anyway, it's a total of over 21,000 miles combined from all the manufacturers' engines, but McLaren really struggling with the mileage. So that does not bode well as we go into this weekend at all. So that's going to be a real issue. As you go into testing, it is all about reliability, because the fact of the matter is there are only four engines, and we'll get into that in just a minute. All right, anyone want to see the cars? I don't know if you've all seen all the cars, but I got some pictures, and I put pictures up here so you guys can see the brand new liveries, the brand new shape. Keep in mind, the whole goal here, folks, 5 seconds faster, wider tires, more aggressive-looking cars. That's exactly what they wanted. They wanted the throwback to the Halcyon days of the late 70s, early 80s, the big, fat, wide tires and the aggressive, mean-looking cars. So this is the answer from those regulations. So the first car up is Mercedes. That's the new Mercedes, and that's what it looks like now. We're going to talk about the shark fin. They're running a partial shark fin here. Notice a couple things here, though. A lot lower rear wing. That's a huge change visually. The front wing, you can't see it on these pictures, but it's sort of a delta. They're swept back. It doesn't really add a massive aero advantage by being swept back. It just follows the line of the car. So the car looked like it's moving while it's standing still. That was the intent. But it's a more aggressive. That's the Mercedes. This is the Ferrari. It has the full shark fin, if you can't tell. The interesting thing about the Ferrari is when you see pictures of them racing, look at their side pods from like three-quarter angle or front on, and notice how high those side pods are. They got those side pod entries way up over the suspension, which is really interesting. and quite a departure. That's, you know, remember back a few years, Ferrari was messing around with pull rod, push rod, and they went push rods. They were trying to get that suspension out of the way of the air inlet from the side pod. But now they went back to pull rods, you know, a couple years ago, and they've moved those side pods. It's an interesting concept that Ferrari have done. This is Red Bull. It always boggles my mind when official marketing departments and press outreach from these teams decides it's a great idea to get a pitch black room with a dark colored car and take a picture of it. I mean, what am I looking at? You know, all I see is a neon sign. I don't know what, you know, it's hard to get any detail. There's another one coming up here in a minute. So everyone has gone to this trend of matte finish cars. Red Bull started it, and everyone has gone to it except Red Bull's sister team. They knew everyone was going to go matte, so they went high gloss, and they look fabulous. They completely stand out from everybody else's dull matte finish paint scheme. But I think the Red Bull did an incredible job. One thing you'll notice on this Red Bull is there are a lot of similar design elements to the Mercedes. And initial press reports came out and said, oh, look, Toro Rosso copied Mercedes. That's complete bunk. Mercedes released their car on Monday and Toro Rosso on a Friday. Are you suggesting that they saw Mercedes design on Monday and milled and engineered new suspensions and everything on Friday? No, what it means is that James Key over at Toro Rosso is brilliant, and he read the technical regulations very, very similar to what Mercedes read that, and even came up with the same suspension design as Mercedes. That's a stroke of genius. A lot of people wonder, where's the next Adrian Newey? I'm telling you, I think James Key is one sharp dude. And that Toro Rosso chassis is usually one of the better chassis on the grid. I'm not saying it's the best engine or it's the best lump for shove, but the chassis is generally really good. So that's something to keep an eye out. Here's Haas. Here's our American contingent. No doubt about it, they have a shark fin, and I think this team did the absolute best of disguising that god-awful shark fin with their graphics. You know, it just got some interesting graphics. You don't really notice it. It's very, I know it's corporate colors for Haas Automation, but that gray is just so drab, you know, even when they make it gloss. But that gray is just, you know, I guess I'm just used to Ron Dennis's creative grays, Predator gray, and all the grays that Ron came up with, right? So, what's that?
Is that gloss?
It is, yeah. So they can come out with a gloss, too. But anyway, good-looking car. That's a Dallara chassis, Ferrari engine, gearbox, and all the parts he could buy off of the approved list that he could get, including the brakes, apparently. We'll get into that. There's the other dark picture. Williams just looks like a couple tires set next to a white martini box. It's hard to tell any detail. I mean, hell, Felipe Massa could be hiding back there. We wouldn't know. You know, he's a little guy. You know, I don't know what to tell you on that. That's their release launch photo. For the love of all things good, I have no idea what happened with McLaren here. I don't know if this was like a local Woking Montessori school that had a little design challenge for their kids, or if someone at McLaren said, hey, I heard that Buddy over in the janitorial department's good with Photoshop. Let's have him throw some colors on there. I have no idea what's going on. Zach Brown, a marketing genius, is now at McLaren and couldn't come up with a better color scheme than this. It looks like a Predator gray McLaren drove through that orange construction fence and got some construction fence on the side of their car. It's bizarre. I have no idea. Needless to say, my least favorite of the car paint schemes. Yep, they did it. They did it. This is Force India. I got to be honest with you. I think it's awesome. I think it's absolutely awesome for a couple of reasons. Because aren't we all getting tired of various versions of gray, red, and silver? You know? And so these guys come out and they get a brand new sponsor. And the sponsor's pink, you know, corporate colors. So they paint the car pink. Look, if you and I own the team, we want eyeballs on in our car, do we not? For whatever limited TV time we get it, that's going to get eyeballs on the car. So I think it's great. Reminds me of Eddie Jordan. Remember when he came out with those real bright yellow cars? You know, they completely stood out from the entire grid, and I love that about it. So, yeah, it could be like the 1957 T-Bird, right? In pink.
Didn't that come with the 1957 T-Bird? Who's a T-Bird fan? Didn't it come in a pink? Jane Mansfield?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Huh? You thought I was just Formula One. So anyway, it's a pink car. I think it's great. I think this team does better than most of the other teams at getting new sponsors. I think it's fabulous. And I'm excited for this team because of where they finished in the Constructors' Championship last year, beating Williams. Sir Frank Williams of Williams. Williams F1. It's great. Who? Oh, he's on the lam. He's running from the law. Yeah, Vijay Malia. No, he's over in the UK. He's holed up over there. Yeah. Say hello to my little friend. Yeah, he's over there, you know. Who knows, with guns and private security and stuff. No, he's wanted for, I don't know, defaulting on big bank loans in India, and they're trying to extradite him. And, how this guy manages to run a racing team while fending off the entire nation of India, I have no idea. I have no idea. But put him in charge of something. The guy's awesome if he can do that. Here's Sauber, or as Grace on the podcast would call it, Sauber. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things you could have done, but making a gilded mirror maybe isn't the best idea. But I don't know. It can't be easy. You know, I'm poking fun at this, but it can't be easy to take a car like that and figure out how to make a cool design. I'd probably just paint the darn thing pink myself. So, all right, this is Renault. Can I tell you guys a little secret? I think this is my favorite car. This car looks bad, doesn't it? Look at the rake on that thing. It's awesome. Just admit it. Yeah, that's coming. So, look at the rake on that thing. Now, if the engine was on song, I think, the fact is Renault have some really, really sharp people. They did have some management things going on during the last fall, and they had some senior management leave. So we'll see how this turns out. But I love the look of this car. Not so much for their uniforms. What were they thinking? Look at these things. That's terrible. Looks like an emergency worker. Doesn't it?
You'll never know if they wet their pants.
Well, you won't. You won't. Well, trust me, it's a Renault engine. They won't. Yeah. I don't know. That's just terrible. That's just bad. There again, somebody phoned it in. It's like they ran out of yellow or black or one or the other. I don't know. Anyway, so that's the suits for Renault. They win the awards for the most ugly suits. All right, so let's talk about the changes in Formula One for 2017. Okay, first change, engines. There is only 4 engines per car for the entire season. 4. Last year was 5. This year is 4. Now, does that mileage they set in testing start to make sense now? Why that's so, so crucial if we've only got 4 engines for Lewis?
Was all of testing one engine?
No. the question was all of testing just one engine? No, for McLaren it was 7. No, it was not. Right, sorry. That was a bit rude, but that's what happens. So the fact is that this is crucial. Only 4 engines for the entire season. Now, I hope I'm wrong on this. I really do. I hope I'm wrong on this. Something tells me we're going to be talking about this issue. We're going to be talking about this. Remember last year, Lewis came up with that idea that over the weekend he would take an engine change on Friday, then he'd take an engine change on Saturday and end up with 2 fresh engines to head into the balance of the season. I believe they've fixed that loophole for this year. So this is, in my mind, I just got this gut reaction that this is going to be a problem. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. I'm hoping these engines, they've evolved now a little bit, and they're pretty reliable. But we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm not totally sold on that. All right, second thing, tires. 25% wider than 2016. The rear width is moved up from 325 millimeters, 405, and the front width raised 245 millimeters to 305. I don't know. As American, I don't know what that works out to. 20 foot or something. I don't know what that is. So I have no idea. Okay, the front wing span is 1650 to 1800, so much wider front wing. A lot wider front wing, and you visibly can see that on the cars. So that's a much bigger leading edge on that air, increases aerodynamics, right? So that's a big deal. The rear wing also, the height of the rear wing, remember I told you it was a lot lower this year than past years. So that makes a big effect too, to move that wing much lower. And it also gave them room to do the diffusers and stuff that's going on in the back. So that was a big change. Also, another change is the side pods. The width of the side pods have moved out 1,400 millimeters to 1,600. The overall weight of the car was increased this year from 702 to 722, so 20 kilograms heavier. This is the reason for this, folks, is to accommodate the bigger tires. So the bigger tires are heavier, more rubber, more weight, and so they had to accommodate that. So that's why they made the weight a little little more. Also, wet weather starts. Remember that trundling around the safety car for 12 laps, and then they finally let him go, and we were all mad about that because they should have just started him, and yeah. So that's been changed. So the safety car, if it's deemed required because of that weather, it's going to go out and circle the laps. The cars are going to go out and circle behind it, clean the water off the track. When it's deemed safe to start the race, the safety car is going to come back in the pit lane. The cars will grid up and do a standing start like normal. And those laps they do will not decrease the lap count. Okay? So it's a bit of a change. Yeah. Guess I have to put more fuel on. Yeah. So they'll have to accommodate that, I guess. I don't know. So that's a change. Biggest change of all year right here, folks. You heard it first. Helmets. Drivers must continue to use essentially the same helmet design at all races for easy recognition of the driver in the car. However, each driver is now allowed to use a special livery at one event of his choosing, such as a home race, for example. It's nice of them to give us an example. We couldn't have put that together. But anyway, so again, the helmet thing. You know, somebody complained that you can't tell who the drivers are from the helmets. I just think with those big shark wings, why don't they put big lit numbers on them? Yeah. Like WEC does, right? Why not? Make use of the billboard. Because Lord knows they don't have any sponsors to put on them. Might as well put numbers on there, right? I don't know. Seemed logical to me. What do I know? I'm just a fan. Okay, the shark fin. Show of hands. Who really liked the shark fin a few years ago and is really excited to have it back? No one? One person? What's that? You know, as a matter of fact, that's how it behaves. It actually is. Yeah. Yeah, they could put LED back there. They could put, like, rolling billboards, you know? Could, you know, whatever they wanted to put on there. You know, they put fast lane cars on there. Is one lap, and then the next lap they could, you know, win a dream date with Greg White. You know, those kind of things, you know. I think it would be great. It would be perfect. So anyway, the shark fin, it's returned along with this thing. This is called the T-wing. And the T-wing and the shark fin, this was basically, folks, the regulations were left open in this particular area. Imagine, if you will, all of us are engineering geniuses. Some of you probably are. I'm not. And imagine if we saw this open gap in the regulations that we could, I always think it's like taking putty and squeezing your hands. Wherever there's a gap, that putty's coming through that gap. And that's the way this engineering works. You leave them a little gap, they're putting something there. They're going to put an aero device, a winglet, some sort of turning vane. They're going to do something like that, all right? So they left this open, so of course they put this on there. Now, the shark fin really comes into effect in yaw. So when the car's cornering, strong winds, it sort of cleans that car up and helps that car rotate, and it works in yaw, all right? The T-wing does that as well, but it's also, I've read two different, I guess, conclusions on this. One says it, too, is like a turning vane, like a weather vane, basically, is the way both of these devices work, is like a weather vane. Although I did talk to an engineer that said that T-wing, yes, it is like a weather vane, but it also does kind of clean the air up a little bit over that leading edge of that rear wing because the rear wing's lower. That's what they told me. I'm not saying I'm an engineering genius, and I know that for a fact. But I definitely know Adrian Newey said that both of them basically act as a weather vane. That's how they react to the car. I did ask Steve Matchett. I said, you know, the fans don't like these, except for the one back here. Fans don't like these. And you're outnumbered. So the fans don't like these. You think they would remove them before the beginning of the season? He said he flew down to Barcelona with Charlie Whiting from London, and he said the same thing to Charlie. And Charlie said, look, you know, and talking to the teams, they gained 3 to 4 points of aero. I was like, wow, seriously? I mean, 3 or 4 points in aero downforce is big. They're not going anywhere. I don't think any engineer, and it's like Steve said in the interview I had with him, you know, if you ask an engineer, you know, do you really need these shark fins? Absolutely, we need those shark fins. We've got to have those shark fins to make the car work, right? So they're going to stick with them, I would imagine. So if you see that kind of stuff in the back of the car, longer wing, and I don't know, Mercedes was running partial shark fin at testing. They could very well show up this weekend with a full shark wing. You know, they may. I don't know. We'll have to see. But the T-wings, if you see those kind of things, that's what they are. So that's... What's that? Yeah. Isn't that that's the million-dollar question right there, isn't it? It is. The question was, what does it do to the cars behind it? Well, the fact is that's what all of this is. The cars have 20% more aerodynamic downforce this year. So in one sense, you're all thinking, wait a tick. Big, wide tires, big mechanical grip. This is awesome because now they're going to be able to go through corners faster, going to be more G-forces. The drivers are going to have to be stronger. It's going to put more back in the driver's hands than the engineers, and this is going to be really awesome. And cars will be able to follow closer because the Pirelli tire compounds will be harder, and they won't overheat when they're falling. This is great until you learn that there's a 20% increase in downforce. So now I don't have any reason to believe that the aero wash off the leading car is going to be any better than it was in the past. I just, you know, when you crank on that downforce, it's drag, you're making a big hole in the air. However, if Pirelli's tires are harder and they've been designed not to overheat when they're following in the wake of another car, I don't know, maybe they can push harder. We'll see. That's what some drivers said they think they may be able to do. I don't know. We'll find out. So really, the politics of F1, as I said, massive regulations. Those regulations really intended to do two things, speed up the cars and make them look much more aggressive than they have in the past. Tragically, I would have added make them sound much more aggressive, but they didn't do that. So we're still with the hybrid turbo V6. Also, the next change, this I'm not sure what's going on. We all know Nico Rosberg left Mercedes promptly after winning the world championship. Now, that may or may not be strange, and the fact of the matter is that the criticism, you know, I get it, but the kid's been racing since he was what, 5, 6? You know, that's a bum full of racing, seriously. When you get to that age and you've spent, you know, racing since in utero, I mean, that's just a lot of racing, and he's got a family now and a kid, and he said, you know, I'm done battling with Lewis. He said, in order to beat Lewis, I had to mentally go to a place that I don't want to go to, and I don't want to do it anymore. Okay, we all know that. But what's the deal with the chief technical boss of Mercedes, Patty Lowe, leaving? Why did that happen? I find that really weird, coming off 3 championships on the trot and a clearly dominant engine and a clearly dominant car. Patty Lowe moves from McLaren, comes here, Ross Brawn leaves, he's in charge, and now he's gone when Nico leaves, right? That's just really strange to me. I don't have any insight. I don't have any rumors or anything to tell you. I just think that that's really strange, and hopefully one day we'll find out what really happened. I don't know what it was, but I don't think a guy like Patty Lowe would leave Mercedes. I'm sorry, I don't see why that would happen. It's not like they don't pay him a lot. He was handsomely compensated, I'm sure. So I'm not quite sure what that is. Also, James Allison left Ferrari, and now he's joined Mercedes. So James Allison, just for those of you playing at home, he was at Lotus, designed Kimi Raikkonen's car, left, went to Ferrari. Tragically, his wife died out of nowhere, which was horrible. He has young kids. That threw last year all in a flux, as it would anyone. He wanted to be closer to his family, of course. Moving back to the UK, now he's with Mercedes. It's a good move for James for sure. It'll be interesting to see. Both Patty now has gone to Williams. So now Patty has gone back from whence he came. He started his career at Williams, and now he's back at Williams. And both Patty and James, the cars are already designed, so it's not like they're going to walk in and radically make a huge impact to either program, but they're going to start looking for ways to improve the program and ways to improve the development pieces for these cars. These cars can be really tricky because you can come out with this chassis, put it on the ground, and race it, and other kit that you throw onto that car during the season reacts really well with the car. The car likes that, and the benefits are obvious. And other cars, you can put on different pieces of kit, and it doesn't react well to development. So, you know, we'll have to see what Patty and James does on that. Bernie wasn't the only one that got kicked to the curb. Ron Dennis got kicked to the curb from McLaren. Nice, Ron. So he got kicked to the curb, right? That's bizarre. Zach Brown now comes into McLaren. So Ron, that's like with Bernie, I've never not known McLaren without Ron and all of his wackiness. But that's a big change. And he's the one that brought Honda in. And, you know, of course, we're all like, Honda, whoa, you know. But keep in mind that Honda isn't just an engine supplier. It's not like McLaren went to Honda and said, okay, you want $20 million a year for your engines? Okay, here's a check, and we expect them delivered here and here. Honda is paying them. I mean, Honda is a sponsor. They're a partner of McLaren. And somebody told me they may bring as much as $100 million to the program. So it's not like, you know, you can be Eric Bouye and just go out into the press and publicly slam Honda like he did today. But, you know, you got to be careful with that partnership, right? Because that's all they got. And then the press were pushing Bouye, well, if you had a Mercedes, would you be winning? And Eric's like, well, you know, we're partners with Honda. Yeah, but if you had a Mercedes, would you be winning? Okay, fine. Yes, we'd be winning if we had a Mercedes. But who wouldn't, right? So he said that, and then they're like, ooh, McLaren's looking at Mercedes, and that's not going to happen. Keep in mind, last year, Mercedes wouldn't give Red Bull a Mercedes engine. Remember that debacle? And if they're not going to give Red Bull one, I don't see them giving McLaren one either. Because contrary to popular beliefs, there's some really smart people over at Woking. And I don't see anybody doing that. So what are they going to do? Well, you know, I think they got to partner out with Honda. What I asked Steve in the podcast is I just want to make sure I wasn't, because I'm not overreacting on this. The issues that Honda, I'm not happy about it, and this is coming from a Ferrari fan, mind you. I'm not happy about it, but on the flip side of it, is it realistic after 3 years to expect Honda to be battling for wins? I don't know. They should be getting better, for sure. Every year should be a linear move, better and better and better, and this year it's not looking like, you know, I don't know, we'll see. But I don't think they should be fighting for wins. You know how long it took Mercedes to fight for wins? It was like 5 years. It took Red Bull 7 years, right? We forget that, but that's the reality. So Honda, McLaren, 3 years back, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it took BMW. Well, that took them a long time. Toyota, you know, even worse. So that's a big deal. Liberty Media acquires Formula One. Mr. E is out. So he's gone from Formula One. That was the other politics for sure. And then Ross Brawn versus the FIA. So here's the deal. So Liberty buys Formula One. They get rid of Bernie Eccleston. They bring in Sean Bratches, former ESPN CMO. And they bring in this plucky young guy named Ross Brawn, who's been around the horn, I guess. The guy's genius. So Ross comes in as effectively the CTO. And Chase Carey, have you seen pictures of him? You know, with the big handlebar mustache, Chase Carey, the new CEO of Formula One. It always reminds me of Kurt Russell in Tombstone. You know? You tell him I'm coming and hell's coming with me. So it always reminds me of that. But so anyway, Chase is CEO, Ross CTO, Sean is CMO. Ross immediately came out and said, okay, so technically, here's what I'm liking to do. I think we're going to do this. Need to think about the future. We want to get some technical, you know, regulations moving the right way. Need to fix these things. Cars need to be able to pass. And I'm thinking, well, this is all great, except for one thing. That's the FIA's job. They're the regulatory body of the sporting and technical regulations of Formula One, not the commercial rights holder. The FIA are, right? But it's a genius move. You start building this pressure. So if all of us save next week's paycheck and we bought Formula One, would we want to entrust our future profitability of our recently acquired asset to a little Frenchman over at the FIA? No offense to Jean Todt, he's a brilliant guy. But would you want to entrust? I mean, one simple change could ruin and reduce viewership, ruin returns on our investment. I wouldn't want some independent regulatory body determining the profitability of my sport. I would want to control my destiny of my acquisition. Wouldn't you guys? I mean, I would. So I think it's a great move by Liberty. Bring in Ross. Ross worked with Jean Todt at Ferrari in the heady days of one title after another. I don't know. I think that's interesting. And Jean Todt, it's going to be very interesting to see what the FIA responds and how they respond to Ross very diplomatically, sort of suggesting we should go this way and do this. And also this F1 strategy group, which is very manufacturer heavy right now, look for that to be challenged in the near future. I think its days are numbered because that's what's causing most of the problems in Formula One now. And we could argue road relevance all day, and you know, but I think Formula One needs a healthy balance of manufacturers and privateers. Red Bull, one of the largest privateers in the sport. You absolutely need Red Bull in the sport. And everybody's like, well, they're all mad last year, you know, don't let the door hit you in the butt. You can't, no. You know how much money Red Bull spends in Formula One? It's astronomical. We need Red Bull in this sport, you know? So we need to cater to both. It'd be interesting to see what happens there. The teams. I always put this picture of Carmen Jordan in there, not because, you know, well, it goes without saying. She's an incredible reserve driver for Renault, but I always put it in for Alex because he likes when I do this. So he's a big Carmen Jordan fan. Okay, let's take a look at the teams. Here are your players. Mercedes. They look very, very good, very, very reliable. Although Toto Wolff, get down, right? Although Toto Wolff says that the margin between them and Ferrari is diminishing. Well, I don't know. We'll find out. You know, I think Nicky was saying before testing, you know, so we go to testing and nobody be sandbagging, you know? That's total shit. So we'll find out, you know? I think Mercedes was sandbagging. I think Nicky was trying to be coy. It's an evolution of already dominant engine, no doubt about it. The intra-team issues prompted that scramble for Valtteri Bottas. Now, was it a good selection? I think it was a really good selection given what they had. What did I want? I wanted Alonso, right? We're getting the band back together, man, right? We're going to get the band back together, dude. We're going to rock it. You know, you talk about, oh, man. You talk about intra-team battle. That would have been wicked. Here's my problem. I would have paid big money to see that battle, but I'd pay big money to see Alonso in a competitive car. Lewis has his feet on the desk, no doubt about it. He's in charge. He's the man for every right reason. He's a 3-time world champion. He's incredibly fast. Look, he's younger than I am. He's a young guy, multimillionaire, jet set and all that stuff. I don't get all that stuff because I'm an old guy. But having said all that, he's a brilliant racer. And he's done pretty well for himself, you know. Seeing all the pictures of him on top of his airplane and everything, it's kind of funny. And his dogs. So anyway, Bottas. Here's my thing with Valtteri Bottas. You say, well, you know, he's got this new guy, Bottas, right? So 9 podiums in 77 races. He's not a new guy. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to drive a car. He's from Finland, they say. And those guys generally know how to drive cars pretty well. And he's pretty darn fast. And he's only signed a 1-year deal. The fact of the matter is that he has 1 year to prove his long-term reason for being at Mercedes. So if you're Valtteri Bottas and you got a 1-year deal, are you going to play wet nurse to Lewis Hamilton and just follow him around? Or are you going to try to show Mercedes that you deserve to be this team? Because not only can you run with Lewis, you can beat Lewis. That's what I'd do. Whatever. Lewis is his issue, right? Because I'm going to tell you what. If the roles were reversed, and they were at McLaren when Lewis came and Alonso was there, Lewis didn't care. He did his own thing. Ron wanted Lewis to follow Alonso around. He said, I'm not doing it. Right? That's the mark of a champion. So I'll be very intrigued to see how this plays out. Is he going to be a Barrichello? or is he going to be a Lewis? And, you know, apologies to Barrichello, because, yeah, but if I was Barrichello, I'd rather win a few races and be second on the podium with Ferrari than completely back in 10th or 11th place at some other little team. So, you know, Barrichello made the right decision too. I think Valtteri will do a good job. He put in more laps, more mileage than any other driver in the grid, and didn't put it in the wall, didn't wreck the car or anything like that. I think it's a good pick. It's a decent pick. Okay, Red Bull. This, in my mind, is the intra-team battle of the year to watch. I think Spark's going to fly because the Honey Badger isn't going to put up with the plucky team. It is not going to happen. The fact of the matter is, like, Max, ooh, Max is aggressive, and he's, you know, he's awesome. And yeah, he is all that. But so is Ricardo. Ricardo is awesome. He's incredibly hard to pass. He'll stick the nose in. He'll bang the wheel with you. He'll, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, the smiling assassin will do it. And I think that that is actually a battle to look for. The car, one of the criticisms that I read of Adrian's car this year is it looked almost too simple, the aero and stuff, with all these teams had turning vanes and all the barge boards and all that stuff. And they said that the Red Bull looked devoid of all that and looked almost too simple. But I was talking to another engineer, and he said, don't make a judgment yet, because that actually may be a stroke of genius. And at this point, if you're still betting against Adrian Newey, you might want to stop. You know, because this guy's got a decent track record, right? So, I don't know. We'll see. It's a very simple-looking car aerodynamically. Anyway, that's the driver battle to watch in my mind. I think it'll be great. All right, Williams. Oh, Felipe. Poor Felipe. They won't let him retire. He can't. Poor guy, he gets hit in the head with a spring in 09. He can't get out of the sport. They drag him back to Ferrari. Then they kick him out and they drag him over to Williams. Last year, was there a dry eye in your house watching Felipe Massa walk up the pit lane in Brazil? I admit I was welling up a little bit. I've watched his entire career. I've met him like a half a dozen times. He's a wonderful guy. Delightful guy. And I'm sitting there, oh man, Felipe, this is really tearing me up. Stop it, you know. And his wife comes out and hugs him, and it was just emotional. All for naught. Yeah, he got a car out of the deal and everything else. I wonder if Sir Frank wheeled over there and said, give me the keys back. So, yeah, I don't know. So also, William signed Lawrence Stroll's wallet. I mean, Lance, his kid, Lance Stroll. Lots of criticism about Lance Stroll. I say, you know what? Ease off the kid. Ayrton Senna paid for his ride, and it's been around a long time. And, you know, I was going to eat my words, though, because he shows up to testing, wrecks twice. And they're like, yeah, we're going to cancel the rest of the week of testing because we don't have any parts left. We don't have a front wing. We only had one front wing. That's what it was. And I was thinking, okay, Claire, wait a minute. You just went to testing with a rookie that's never been in the F1 car and you only had one wink? Hello. Hello. So that was a little weird. We'll see how Lance does. Moss is going to be relied on incredibly heavy this year. He's the guy that's carrying all the weight for this team. You know, I don't know. He changed after 09. There's no doubt about it. He's a tidy driver. Last year when he was on Song, he was running with Valtteri. He's running with everybody. Can he do it? I think he'll do fine. The real problem is Williams is fighting Force India in that championship. And if they can't get Lance in the points, that's a problem. Because Massa isn't always consistently in the points either. That was the problem at Ferrari. And that was the problem in the last couple of years at Williams. Valtteri's in the points. Massa, not so much. And those points add up. And those points equal millions of dollars. And I think that's going to be an issue. Speaking of Ferrari, made a lot of improvement, I think, over testing. They look good. The mileage is great news. It was a really good test. Great reliability so far. They've got to get a pointy car. Sebastian does not like understeer. He doesn't like it at all. He likes to have a very pointy car. So they're going to have to do that. It'll be interesting to see if they've narrowed the gap to Mercedes. I don't know that they have, but I got to say, last year, don't you get the impression Kimi looked a lot better last year? He looked more on Song last year. It looked like that car favored him. He liked that. Yeah, he likes a pointy car too. So I think that worked really well. you know, there was lots of talk about last year, you know, cutting heads. I don't know how many more heads you can cut over there. Sergio's cut about everybody but himself. Well, I guess you could cut the team boss, Maurizio Arrivabene. Yeah, that guy. That guy, I met him. I was when I did the ride with Seb, and I was at the party, and I met Maurizio, and I walked up to him, and I said, "He looks like Sam the Eagle from the Muppets," you know. And I walked up to him, and I said, "Oh, Maurizio, can I have a picture with you?" And he just looks at me, and he turns around, and he's just scowling, you know. And the person I would take the picture, and it looks like me, and it honestly looks like I just sat there and assaulted his wife or his girlfriend or somebody. He's like scowling at the camera. I was like, "Dude, that's the look. That's every look ever from you, right there. You know, every time we see you on TV, you always have that look. Lighten up." So anyway, yeah, I am not shy in saying this. I have always been a Ferrari fan. And I hope this year is better. I do. And that's for the sport. So, any Ferrari fans in here? Just a couple? Yeah. You didn't raise your hand, and I know you're a Ferrari fan. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Yeah. So it looks good for Ferrari so far. I mean, if the car's there, Seb will get it done. I don't have any doubt about that. I'm living proof. So I have no doubt about it. Okay, McLaren. Fernando Alonso. Here's the biggest thing about McLaren. I think the biggest crime right now is they can't deploy their secret weapon. And he is their secret weapon. Arguably, probably one of, if not the best driver on that grid. And we don't get to see it, you know? If the TV would focus on him, you know, more, even though he's running 10th or, you know, 6th or wherever he might be, we'd see some incredible driving from him. But we just don't get to see him on the TV. We don't get to see Fernando do what it is he does, which is grab that car by the scruff of the neck and force it to finish in a position it has no business in being in. Does that sound familiar to any of you Ferrari fans? That's what Schumacher did, right? So that's a rare, rare talent, and he's got it, and it's such a shame that it didn't manifest itself when he was at Ferrari, and it's a shame that it isn't manifesting itself here. And I got news for you. I don't know where the heck it's going to manifest itself from here. If he doesn't stay, maybe Mercedes gets adventurous and brings him in and lets Valtteri Bottas go at the end of next season. His contract's up at the end of this year. I don't know what he's going to do. This other guy, Stoffel Vandoorne, this guy is the real deal. This kid can drive. No doubt about it. Do you remember last year when he stood in for Fernando Alonso? He scored points for Mercedes. Fernando and Jensen hadn't. He did. This kid can drive. There's no doubt about it. This kid is hot property. And as much as I hate to see JB go, this is a good move for this team. It really is. Keeping JB was good, too. I like JB. If the car's there, JB will do well. There are people, but few are as good as JB in changeable conditions. But Stoffel is really good. Mobile left, which is big. So, yeah, I don't know. There's big issues. They've got, who do they have now? They just signed a fuel company. BP? Was it BP? Somebody like that? Castrol? BP, yeah. Okay, so they found somebody to replace it. Force India, Sergio Perez. He equally is the real deal. I like Sergio a lot. I was saying that Sergio was, I took a lot of heat for saying this in his rookie year. But as soon as I saw him race Monaco, do you remember his rookie maiden year when he raced at Monaco? And he unfortunately put it into the barrier at the Nouvelle Chicane and hurt. You know, he got hurt. He was out the next race. That kid was putting in some incredible laps at Monaco. And I said at that time, that kid is for real. And he is. He's a really good driver. Force India comes off the best year they've ever had in their history last year. They have a lot to prove. They got a lot to live up to. They've got a Mercedes lump in the back. They're one of the best teams at securing sponsorship. They've got a team owner that can run the team and run from the law at the same time, which is massive. I think that's really good. And they've got Esteban Ocon. Now, this is an interesting deal. Pascal Wehrlein was at Manor. He's a Mercedes stable driver. So is Esteban Ocon. But Ocon gets the nod. Pascal does not. Pascal ends up over at Sauber, but Ocon gets the nod to go to the better team. And I find that interesting. He's unknown. We'll have to see how he does. Don't know. Could turn out to be crashed or Maldonado Mach 2. He may not. Also, Toro Rosso. Anyone surprised Daniel Cafiat is still there? It's kind of interesting, isn't it? He is still there. They're going to give him another chance. He's got flashes of pace and flashes of brilliance. He really does. You can tell it's there. He just can't quite get it all calmed down, hooked up into racecraft and scoring points, you know. It just doesn't quite happen. Carlos Sainz absolutely happens for this guy. This guy is really good. A great driver and did the lion's share of the work. James Key, again, a fabulous designer, and he's done an incredible job with Toro Rosso and their chassis development and designing. If that Renault is decent, it could be good. If Cafiat doesn't have his head in the game, look for the draconian Dr. Helmut Marko to pull him even mid-season and put Pierre Gasly in. That wouldn't surprise me at all. They'll make those changes if they feel like they should. Back at Renault, they pick up Nico Hülkenberg from Force India. I got a lot of time for Nico. I think he's a really good driver. You know, he actually won Le Mans, right? Yep. Porsche. You know, that's not easy to do. So he's a really good driver. It's a shame he hasn't been in a top team, but I think that that's really good. Julian Palmer, my jury's out a little bit on Julian because, you know, he didn't have that great of a season last year, but I can argue a few reasons as to why he really didn't have a good season. So I think that's why he's still here. Well, that and money. But I think that's part of the reason that he's getting another shot at it this year to kind of see if he can actually do something greater. You know, hitting the wall at Monaco wasn't a brilliant, you know, that wasn't his high water mark last year. So we'll have to see how he does. I don't know. I think some of the management issues internally have been solved with the departure of some key management. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure I'm totally sold on Cyril Abiteboul as the head guy at Renault. He came from Caterham, you know. I don't know. I'm just not quite totally convinced. I like Alain Permain, but I'm not quite sure about Cyril. But I think the cars look fabulous on the grid. Look great. And then Sauber, as I mentioned, Pascal Wehrlein goes to Sauber. Ultimately, it's all about development. They don't have the cash to develop this car. They've got to score points early on in the season, and that's got to happen quickly because that's worth millions of dollars. If that doesn't happen quickly, they're going to get frog-marched to the back of the grid as the other teams outspend them in development throughout the rest of the season. So it's always going to be uphill for Sauber in 2017. They've got the same Ferrari engine that Ferrari does. They've got to make hay while they can. That's going to be the biggest problem. I also hear Pascal's not the easiest driver to work with. Maybe that had something to do with why he didn't get the Force India nod over the Sauber nod. And Paul at the website and I, we have this running joke about Marcus Ericsson, and I always say you don't F with the Swede. And then I always say that to him and on every podcast. And then Paul has always taken Nasser, and I'm always taking Marcus from last year, and Marcus wins last year. So it's this little fun battle Paul and I have. So now he has Pascal this year, and I got the Swede. So we'll see how that turns out. It's a fun battle between us. Haas, F1, Romain Grosjean, and Kevin Magnussen. This team, I think, had a great introduction year last year. In the points, scored good points, scored millions of dollars in prize money. It doesn't get much better than that as a debut season. I think it's a fabulous start for Haas, fabulous start for Gunther Steiner and Gene Haas. They're doing things right. Picking up Kevin is the right move from Esteban Gutierrez, or as we call him, the Goot. The Goot was not good, but I think Kevin Magnussen is good. He'll be good in the team. He'll deliver the points if possible. He doesn't lose his head that much. I think he's a decent, solid driver, and so is Romain. Unfortunately, last year they had brake issues. Remember a few times they ran off track last year, Romain? And they could not get these brakes fixed for whatever reason, and they were just kind of left with the Brembos that they were working with. And this year, We talked about it last year on a podcast, and we said, what does that do to a driver mentally? You know, you jam on the brakes, the car is going to stop. What happens when it doesn't? Two or three times, right? All of a sudden, you don't have a driver that's comfortable in the car. And if your driver isn't comfortable in the car, we're all in trouble, right? Well, testing, right off the bat, Roman comes out and says, brakes. Now, I don't know if that's psychosomatic, if there's something in particular that Roman wants out of his brakes, that he isn't. I have no idea. But I haven't seen Kevin Magnussen go into the meeting and say, yeah, those brakes are a dumpster fire. I haven't seen that either. So I asked Steve Matchett, what does Gunther do at this point? He said, well, put on Carbon Industries, you know, discs and say, Roman, that's as good as it gets. You're just going to have to deal with it. I don't know what to, you know, I don't know what else he can do. So not sure what's going on there. I think Grosjean, I think ultimately, he's got to be aiming to go back to Renault. You know, he's French. They're French. Just seems French, right? It's a French thing to do. So I could see that happening. I think he should eventually. If he does make that move, it'd be nice to get an American in this seat. I don't know who. There you go. Yeah, Santino Ferrucci, yep. Isn't he their reserve driver? I think he's still their reserve driver, yeah. So it could be him. He is, an American with an Italian name. That's never happened, right? So I don't know. We'll see how that works. Gene, last year, a little critical of Ferrari, very gingerly so. You know, was hoping he'd get more help engineering-wise out of Ferrari. That's not going to happen. Not going to happen, you know. What, you get 20 minutes of press time with Sebastian and 5 minutes with Kimi? That's all you get from Ferrari, right? Who told me that right before? Who's that? You did, yeah. So that was out of a press release, you know. Ferrari does what Ferrari does, and you either take it or you don't. And so Gene's going to have to come up with the engineering on his own. I did ask Steve, when do you see Gene moving away from this listed parts program to fully building his own chassis and own program? And he said, I don't see that happen anytime soon, you know. So I wouldn't hold your breath on that. So, rest in peace. No more Manor. Yay, hybrid engines. It's worked out well. So no more Manor. They lost 10th place in the championship in the last race of the season to Sauber. It's miserable. And because they lost that, that was about $30 million. That would have kept them in the hunt. That didn't happen. They're dead. And it's too bad. It's really too bad. Of the three teams that entered, HRT, Caterham, and at the time, Virgin Marussia, which was Manor. The team I picked to cheer for was Manor, and I hate to see him go because I loved the look of their car last year. They had some good engineering. They had Dave Ryan from McLaren come back to the team to run the team. It felt like they were moving the right direction, and they just went bankrupt. So,
Sauber finishes dead last this year. Do they still get the 10th place, 30
yes.
million?
Because there's only...
So the points aren't as critical this year as they
No, were. Because they're a team down, so they're going to finish in 10th no matter what. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that that went down the way that it did. Quick, who's in and out? Van Dorn, again, in at McLaren. Nico Rosberg, out. Felipe Massa, out, but back in, right? So he's back in. It's like a revolving door with him. Jenson Button, out. Lance Stroll, in. Those are the ins and outs on the driver's side. Your calendar for 2017 looks like this. I've just highlighted the crown jewel, which is Monaco, and then I highlighted Austin because every once in a while some of you get a wild hair and decide to go down to Texas and go down to Austin. And if you are, mark your calendars, October 22nd. That's when the Australian, or the Austin Grand Prix, Australians this weekend. So that'll be good. All you worried about, what's his name, Greg Maffei of Liberty Media, who was berating Baku and said they don't do anything for their brand. If you were worried about that, Baku is still on the grid, on the calendar. So they will be there. So that is that. Finally, what do I think you're really looking for in 2017? Mercedes, can Lewis win his fourth title? That'll be the big question. Will Valtteri give him any battle? Will Ferrari give him battle? Will Ferrari mount any sort of challenge Can Seb match Merck in pace? Can he do it? That's what we're looking for. I hope so, for the hope of the sport. I think it would be great if we could get that inter-team battle. Fourth place, I think this is a big deal. Could Toro Rosso, could Force India, could Williams. Who's going to get that fourth and fifth in the championship? That's actually turning out to be a pretty good battle in Formula One, and one that's pretty fun to watch. So I like that. And then also, Max, can he beat Daniel Ricciardo? Will he beat Daniel Ricciardo? This could be the year that determines where Red Bull puts their focus. Is it behind? You remember with Weber and Vettel? You kind of sensed that they were all about Vettel, you know, right? And this will be interesting. Does this another Australian that gets the short end of the stick because Max is that good? I don't know. It's tough because, yeah, Max is 19 and, you know, and he's marketable and all that, but so is Daniel Ricciardo. You know, kid's got a great smile, great personality. Yeah, I don't know. That'll be a fun battle to watch. So look for those things in 2017. At least that's what I'm going to be watching anyway. Also, you can contact us, you know. After years and years of trying to get Greg White out of St. Louis, we finally succeeded, folks. It was a lot of hard work and sacrifice from all of you, but we finally got him to pack up and leave. So, yeah, so be in touch with me. If you want to do this next year, let me know. You can get me at todd@formulaoneblog.com, the word formula, numeral1blog.com, and you can get me at Todd or NC, either way. I answer to both of those. Also, we opened a Patreon account, so if you're feeling exceptionally charitable, you can certainly go to Patreon, to our Patreon account, and support us that way. We're not monetized. We're not a monetized site. And I probably spend 40 or 50 hours on this website on top of the day job. So anyway, any support would be much appreciated. All right, before I bail out and start loading everything out, let's open it up for questions and answers. Or at least let's do this. Let's open it up for questions. Maybe I have the answers. We'll find out. I'm not promising anything. All right. Let's see, he just renewed his contract last year, and I think it's at least a 2-year deal.
Did you ever see him win Mercedes?
That's possible. It's possible. I could see Mercedes, I could see Ferrari luring him away, because Ferrari doesn't usually like to go get rookies and unknowns. They hire champions. They hire established, really good drivers, so you never know. You never know. Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. The question was, did Patty Lowe get to skip the gardening leave deal because of the Bottas deal, right? And I think that's exactly what happened. I remember Toto Wolff saying that it's very, very clear that Claire Williams is Frank Williams' daughter. She drives a hard bargain, and I imagine that they paid quite a bit for that deal, and I think part of that was all tied up with the Patty Lowe deal. Yeah, look, you can have him. It's X amount of dollars. If I'm Williams, I'm saying, hey, we get a free Mercedes engine supply for this season, and we get Patty Lowe to start right now. You know, so it's a wonderful question. I'm not saying that's what they got. That's what I would have been asking for. But I do think Patty not having to go on mandatory garden leave was part of the deal.
As far as engines, I mean,
it's a grid place, 10 place, I think. Or is it the back of the grid? It's back of the grid, maybe. Yeah. 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 Right. Okay, the question was, are there any rumors of new teams to be popping up in 2018? Not that I've heard of. I have not heard of, and I kind of feel like if there was one sort of on the cusp of joining, maybe a GP2 team that wanted to move to F1, they probably would have done it when Manor was on the ropes, and they probably would have gone in, swept up the assets, and moved in. It seems like the cheapest way, because they already have the entrance license and fee. So if Alex and I start a Formula One team, Gene had to do this. Started a Formula One team from scratch, want to join Formula One, $40 million as a retainer to enter Formula One. If you buy a team that's already in it and has the application for Formula One, then you don't have to spend that. So Manor had that asset. And I think there were several people looking at it, though, but it didn't happen.
So then, so was Liberty then going to Sauber were about halfway through the season or at the end of the year, you're down to 18 cars. Are they going to allow all that to happen?
Did everybody hear that? No, the question was, so is Liberty going to do something or help a small team so they don't go out of business like Sauber or somebody like that if they start to struggle? It's a great question, and my issue, and I even said this in one of my editorial pieces when Manor went under, is I'm very surprised that Liberty didn't do anything because they just bought the asset, and losing one team hurts the asset, and it surprised me that they didn't. I tend to think that Bernie Eccleston probably would have solved that problem. He has in the past, anyway. And I'm a little surprised that Liberty didn't come in and say, well, okay, whoa, time out. Okay, let's advance you some prize money, something, you know, to keep them in the sport, because having 22 cars is much better than having 20. So I was a little surprised at that. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Yeah, yeah. The question was, if you didn't hear it, the controversy this past week or so has been about Mercedes. Red Bull have alleged that Mercedes is actually burning oil on top of the piston head and not just it seeping by the O-ring. And so the allegation was that last year that oil had additives in it that when burned would increase and boost performance radically. And so... You know, I say, like, oh, engines burn oil. It happens. You know, one of those deals. I don't know what's going on.
How much oil were you using?
I don't know, you know. And I think Mercedes said, well, you guys are seeing ghosts. I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, here's what we are willing to do. We'll say, you know, there's a load of oil, a limit that you have to have on the car, which was well above the needed amount that you would burn for the advantage over the race. So that didn't exactly appease anyone. Yeah, there's definitely allegations about that. I was going to ask Shell because... Well, I know the folks at Shell. I know the guy who is actually in the trackside lab at Ferrari. His name's Guy Lovett. Wonderful person. And I would ask him, but he's not going to tell me. There's no way. There's no way Shell is ever going to say anything about them or what they're doing or about what Mercedes is going to be doing. I say this, where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't, you know, these things just don't materialize out of nowhere. I suspect... that they may be doing something, I don't know, but I wouldn't want to be Charlie Whiting trying to figure it out, I can tell you that. That would be pretty tough. So I don't know what they're going to put in place to make sure. I think the FIA came out and said, yeah, that's illegal, and if you're doing it and caught, that's illegal, but caveat, you know, some oil, we can't say no oil because some oil does get in there and burn. Well, that's opening a window. Because now it's up to interpretation of what's some, right? So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. The other controversy is over the Frick suspension, the front and rear connected suspension. Red Bull was running a similar suspension and design for this year. Mercedes did it last year, certainly was going to do it this year. Brilliant move by Ferrari. So Ferrari... If you're a Ferrari fan, it's brilliant. If you're not, it's not so brilliant. If it's not, you're going to go, typical Ferrari. But here's what they did. They came out, and they wanted to really make sure that they clamped down on this suspension issue. So what they did is they sent a letter to the FIA and said, hey, look, we've got this really, really awesome front and rear connected or interconnected suspension system, and it's going to be totally trick, and it's totally awesome. But we're concerned... that it might violate the regulations. Explicitly, violation number 4, violation number 7, and violation number 9. Could you please clarify for us if our trick suspension would actually violate one of those, forcing the FIA to then publicly have a position on those particular regulations that they wanted clarification on to force Mercedes and Red Bull to ditch whatever it was that they were doing. It was a classic fidati, you know, so what do you want? It was a classic move. So they all showed up to testing, and the FIA examined all of the suspensions. They did ask one team to make a suspension change. Everyone said they thought it was Red Bull, but at the time they did that, they hadn't inspected Red Bull yet. So I don't know who it was. I don't know who it was. It'd be very intriguing to know. It could have been Mercedes. I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see. Other questions?
So Is there any problem with the Mild Jewel? I mean, I think you're in that with my books. But they had their other game. There's no, I mean, they already built the car, so the fuel amount of gallons is there.
Right, right. Are you saying?
I'm just saying they might run out of gas.
Oh, yeah, no. It's a great question. He was saying, are they going to run into issues with the fuel in this year's regulation car? There is some possibility of that. I'm intrigued, like you, I'm intrigued with the concept of the cars. There were some people, and I don't want to say Pat Simmons, but I thought it was Pat Simmons, people that I respect a lot saying, hey, this year the cars are going to be full throttle for like 70, 80, 90% of the lap. Which I found really bizarre. That seems really high to me, right? Yeah, okay, so Alonso may have been one of them. And I'm sitting there thinking, 90% of the lap, they're going to run out of fuel. They're going to run out of fuel if you're running full 90% of the lap unless there's massive horsepower that you are able to store in the ERS and all that. But I'm not quite sure. They were saying, oh, yeah, corners are going to be straights now.
What about the weather days if they have to go around the track?
Yeah, they got that issue, yep.
They're going to start again.
Yep, right. And I think it's a case of kind of wishful thinking that they're going to be running full throttle 90%. I don't think that's right. And I don't ever see LaSource being in a full throttle corner. I'm sorry. I don't see that happening. I will say, though, they are much faster through the corners. There's no doubt about it. So when we see him this year, remember I said 5 seconds is what they wanted to gain. Keep in mind that's 5 seconds from the lap times that they were setting in 2013 or 2014 when these new engines came in. In the meantime, these engines have already evolved 2 seconds of that back. And now 5 seconds on top of that, we actually very well could see some real lap records fall now.
What about the...
Yeah, so the question is the clutch bite points, the regulations on that. There is a whole lengthy paragraph on Formula1.com or F1.com about the clutch and the regulations around it. Suffice it to say that they are not allowed to map the bite points on the clutching. And what they used to do is it was on the installation lap that the drivers would find the bite points in the clutch and they'd map it to that, and that would help them get a launch, right? They're not able to do that anymore. They've restricted even where the clutch paddles are on the steering wheel. Mercedes has come up with a different paddle, a finger grip thing to get around the regulations already. The bottom line is this is a big deal because it's a huge paragraph, and I urge you to go look at it, but it is a big deal on these clutch bite points and how these cars are getting sort of artificial launch control and the way the engines are mapped and how those clutch bite points. So the FIA trying to really, really knock down on that. It's a big deal this year.
What are you talking earlier?
I didn't hear the last part.
Make F1 more American.
There's yeah.
More races in the U.S.? What is their goal? How do they think they're going to do that?
Yeah.
And is New Jersey going to come back?
No, I don't see that happening. Yeah, I do know what you're saying. So the desire is to have more races. The question is more American, F1 more American. And is there any rumors? I mean, are they going to do more races or... what's going to happen? The short answer to that is that Liberty Media said during their acquisition that they're very keen to have more races in America. I would say that it would be low-hanging fruit, and there's probably no surprise why most of the new races in Formula One's calendar are street courses. Why? Because the Circuit of America spent $400 million building that circuit, and it doesn't take $400 million to throw up some jersey barriers and some foam and race around the street. So I would imagine, if I was guessing, I would imagine Liberty would really like to possibly look at something like Long Beach as an option. Because possibly, but I don't think the Glen's going
to
spend a bunch of money.
They would almost have to be the promoter.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think, isn't Chris Pook still involved in that? No, he's not. Who's the other guy then?
Calcoven.
That's it, Calcoven. So he's still involved in that. And did they re-up with Indy?
Yeah.
Okay.
5 years of
And last year was first year on a 5-year deal? Okay. So, yeah, I don't know if that will do it. The other side of that, wouldn't it? I've always been a fan of Elkhart, but Elkhart would have to spend, you know, millions to upgrade that to a grade level one, FIA grade level one.
So, what's the difference?
That was the big criticism.
That's $2 million for one over cheap.
No, it's $400 million sanctioning fee is what it is.
Well,
yeah. So when you look at Baku, the question was, you know, what's the deal? I mean, so you got to spend hundreds of millions of getting a circuit FIA grade one, and you can go and throw a few jersey barriers and some barriers around Baku this far from, you know, a 1,000-year-old church, and that's all okay. The criticism last year, a lot of fans and a lot of the press raised this. They said, this does not look safe, that one corner in particular, where Lewis took off his right rear or right front. They said, this does not look safe at all. And that was some of the criticism. And Charlie, you know, no, it's totally safe. And, yeah, it's safe to the tune of $400 million or whatever it is. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I didn't mind it. I thought it was kind of neat. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, the only thing I can think of is that what might happen, and I haven't read the detailed in the tech or sporting regulations. My hunch is if they've got to go out, they don't know how many laps they're going to have to run around in order to get that circuit dried off. And because I would think that they'll go around, and then they're just going to have to either say, "Hey, it's a wet race. You've got to put in X amount more fuel, and we're going to run for 10 laps, and if it's over 10 laps, we'll bring the cars in, top them off, run them back out." I don't know if there's something to accommodate for the fuel, but that is my first question. I'm sure they have a method. I just don't know it. Yeah, I think they're still working on 2-hour time limit.
So that's the thing. It doesn't matter how many laps.
Mm-hmm.
That
could be too, because you're going to run 2 hours, and you got enough fuel to run 2 hours.
Yeah, it's not going to
be
10 hours.
Right. That could be. Yeah, that could be. The time from the start, yeah. Well, or it could be the time from the laps going around. Yeah, that could be. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's a good question. They're great questions. I need to dig into it and write a post on it because I haven't seen anybody really unpacking it yet. But that's a good question. I think there's a lot of questions around it. You know, things like, well, what about the cars that are starting from pit lane? You know, that kind of thing. So if they go out and they deem that it's not safe to start the race, then what, you know, they all come back in the grid, and then, you know, what is that procedure? And are they in park fermé? Can anyone touch the car? You know, there's a lot of procedural stuff that I'm sure they've worked out. I just haven't read it. Any other questions?
Any tire compounds at all?
No, there's still the ultra soft. The purple is still out there. The tire compounds, and as a whole, are harder, all across the spectrum. Lewis said that you know, it was a little harder to get heat in them, but he said that yeah, they don't degrade as fast, but that's in temperate weather in Spain in the winter. He's not sure how they're going to react in the hot or in the heat. I'm not either. The whole goal from Pirelli was to make a harder compound that didn't overheat when you're following cars in disturbed air. So the idea is to make much more grip, wider tire, harder compound, follow a car, and be able to push and press and pass without overheating and graining those front tires. That's what they wanted. Whether they've achieved it or not, I'm not sure. Yeah. The brakes are bigger. Braking zones are much shorter. Yeah. And the cars stop much faster, and the braking zones are much shorter. Yeah. Is anyone new to Formula One? Not watch a lot of Formula One? Anyone? New-ish? No? Okay. Good. Veterans? Did you?
Yeah.
Are you new to Formula One?
No.
No, you're a veteran.
I went to Spa.
Guy went to Spa. I'm sorry, what? Yes. Yeah. But the circumference of the tire is bigger because they're wider. Yeah. Oh, yeah, the Halo, they did do some testing. I think it's been put off until next year, quote unquote.
They tried the jet class and it blew up.
Yeah. So they do that pneumatic tire gun,
yeah,
right? Shoot that tire at the car. And but yeah, the Halo last year, it's going to be this year. And then I think there was still a lot of concern over that. I don't like the way they look, and most of the drivers don't like them, but they're playing nice, you know, they're, oh, whatever. And in defense, I guess with deference to the drivers, look, if it's a way to improve safety, you know, there are drivers that are for it, and I don't want to marginalize that. But I was kind of worried about what happens if the car is overturned like Alonso in Australia last year. What happens if that unit is deformed but still attached? Or what happens if the chassis... You know what I'm saying? I just think there's all these different permutations that could happen that thing actually could prevent a driver from getting out as quick as they could without it. It's not that I'm discounting what happened to Henry Surtees isn't realistic and a reason to do head protection. I get it, but I kind of feel like, look, if you're going to do that, then do like LMP1 at Le Mans, just put a canopy on it, you know? And then that ceases to be what we all know is open wheel racing and open cockpit racing, right? It ceases to be. So, anything else? Oh, yeah, who's going to win Le Mans? Who's left? Good question. I don't know. But there are going to be a lot of Ford GTs over there. That's for sure.
So,
yeah, right. All right. Well, I appreciate it so much, guys. Thank you so much for coming. And thank you for going to the website.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.